Begin.
There we go.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
And normally I would say something, but Dylan reckons we've got a new format today, so I don't know what gets said here. Go for it, Dylan.
Well, look, I think between the two of us, we've been planning for months, intricately planning for at least the last 20 minutes. A new format. Well, a different format. A changed format. Less of just you and I talking to each other in some strange echo chamber, and more of you and I talking to one other person in some strange echo chamber.
Yeah.
What do you think?
All right.
I reckon we do it and see what happens, and then refine as necessary.
All right, make it happen.
All right, so the one other person we've chosen to talk to is Vaughan Davis, internet.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
Person.
Hey!
It's a long time since I used that button. I don't actually know much about Vaughan Davis. I know that he's a social media guy, and I've heard something about Goat Farm, and that's all I know.
He's a social media douchebag and an advertising chap.
I'm totally the douchebag. I have a folder.
Fuck you, I'm the douchebag in the room. What is this?
Yeah, I have a folder on my email program called douchebag shit, into which goes all the social media stuff. Yeah. But no, I'm not a social media guy. It's just a little bit of what I do. I'm an advertising guy. Is that better or worse?
Oh, like a classic advertising guy. You do radio stuff.
Do you do a lot of billboards? Well, two people talking to each other.
Yeah, I have. I have done those double headers, as they call them.
Ever done anything with John and what's her name from Magnus Benro?
Well, you know what? I in the past have written radio ads for Magnus Benro, but when I was at a place called Prime Media, which was a terrible place, a radio station holding company that did the back end, if you like, for a whole bunch of radio brands, I wrote the ads for Magnus Benro, but it was before Adrian and John. I'm ashamed because I think those ads are magnificent.
Did you ever work at BFM?
Pardon me?
Did you ever work at BFM?
I never worked at BFM, no. No, I went to university in Canterbury, courtesy of the Royal New Zealand Air Force. Thank you very much, taxpayers.
Yeah, before being an advertising and social media douchebag.
Yes.
You were a
some sort did of you hear that sigh? He's already rejected the social media douchebag label. So
no, he didn't reject it. He embraced it.
I said I'm
he just
a douchebag.
Says it's only a small part of his overall douchebaggery.
I'm more than just a douchebag. Yeah, I was you know what we used to call those? Yeah, those green flying overalls that Tom Cruise used to wear in Top Gun. You know, can you picture them? You know the ones. They were called Zoom bags.
Yeah.
Back in, I know. It's embarrassing to say it. So before I was a douchebag, I was a Zoom bag. Yeah, flying in the New Zealand Air Force.
Wow.
So I saw you first. You were at some sort of conference, delivering some sort of speech about social media or something.
Sounds very douchey.
And one way or another, I ended up editing those videos, and I was like, "Oh, this guy looks interesting." Ooh. So I followed you on Twitter. That was. I don't know how long ago that was.
First mistake.
So cool. So then I followed you ever since, and you wrote a little Twitter book once.
Briefly. Yeah, I did. I did write a Twitter book. So in between now and my Air Force days, there was a long patch where I worked in big advertising agencies. And as a sort of a shortcut to social media credibility when I sort of made that switch, I wrote a book in 2010 called Tweet This Book. When I say a book, you know, it was a bunch of blogs, a few talks I'd given, and a bit of filler, but with an ISBN number on the back, and published that, and it was very successful. I'd recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, I actually recommended it to someone once.
Yeah.
Some business person I knew who wanted to start going on Twitter, and I was like, well, you're just going to fuck this up, so read this book, and then you'll...
Have a read, yeah.
Yeah, read this book, then you'll fuck it up anyway, and I can point to you the bit in the book where it said you shouldn't do that.
The book's wildly out of date now, of course, because it's like, you know, it refers to Second Life, I think, is how old it is. But the thing that stands the test of time, and I think the best part about the book is nothing to do with me, is the distribution method called pay with a tweet. Did you have a look at that
pay with a tweet.
Yeah, pay with a tweet.
Not sure how much my tweet was worth at the time, but I paid.
It was worth a book.
Yeah, there you go.
In fact, invented by this German, I think, working in America advertising creative team who rebranded themselves. So advertising creative teams for the listeners or the listener in Hamilton. Hi, mate.
No, he's not here.
Oh, is he not here? Okay.
No, the Hamilton Live listener.
It's a two-person team, an advertising team. But these guys rebranded themselves as Innovative Thunder. Innovative Thunder. So if you go to their website, maybe whoever's not the busiest can look up their website because it's got a really good audio sting under Innovative Thunder. And they invented Pay With A Tweet. And Pay With A Tweet is basically what I called a pre-commendation engine. So before you can unlock the download, whether it's a book or a track or a video clip or whatever, you've got to send out a tweet that contains the link to the download so all your friends can virally pick it up. Very clever. I liked it.
So I kind of hate, you know, there's lots of companies do retweet competitions.
Yes.
I hate those, but for some reason I don't feel as bad about the retweet, about the tweet to buy thing.
Well, this wasn't a competition. This was, it's like, you know, give me something of small value and I'll give you something of small value. I guess that
But my argument against the retweet contest is always that you're encouraging me to spam my followers in exchange for something, which is kind of what the Pay With A Tweet thing is, but I've never had a problem with that. Not sure why.
Yeah. I suppose it was a bit like that, but it worked. I mean, 20,000 downloads of the book in a year or so compared to what you would. Whitgles. It's a fantastic way to get your ideas out there.
Well, Whitgles doesn't even have e-books.
We're doing, right? It was social media, so kind of perfect.
Did you see that Whitgles has removed all their e-books?
I read that. So Dylan Horrocks, who if anyone happens to follow me on Twitter at Vaughan Davis, he's the New Zealand graphic novelist and sort of comic artist who did my profile picture. He was talking about that tonight. They've removed all their Kobo books, right?
Yeah.
Was that the deal? Because there was a few instances of fan-published or, you know, self-published inappropriate content within the incredibly large sort of Kobo bookstore. And as a result, they pulled them all. It's like shutting down the library because there's a dirty book down the back.
What do you do that's not social media?
What I do is not social media. Well, most of what I do is not social media. So I, at the Goat Farm, which is my company, we provide full service advertising creative for a bunch of clients. So, you know, everything from, you know, billboards and, leaflets and press ads and radio ads and all that sort of stuff. At a fraction of the big agency cost.
I've been watching Scandal lately. Do you think you could see yourself as a fixer?
I don't know. I watched. I was down in Wellington a couple of weeks ago, and ended up in this, you know, crappy hotel room on Lambton Quay with nothing else to do. So I watched Scandal, and then 2 weeks later, out comes the Len Brown thing. So
I was thinking, could you fix Len Brown? Do you think he did it right? I mean, not obviously the not having the affair thing would have been a better choice.
Yeah, that would have been a good first step. I don't know. I mean, PR is a whole art of it. It's all of its own. You know, and there's some very, very clever people in this town who are very, very good at that, and I am not one of them.
Morgan's gone quiet. He's trying to see how long he can not talk for.
Yeah, it's this long. It's a really kick-ass interviewing technique. Apparently, you ask a question, then you just sit there quietly and wait for the subject to blurt something out.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Thought maybe we could summon him back. Didn't work.
Buffering.
Yeah, I think he's actually removed his microphone. He's probably left. He's probably off getting a drink.
Okay, well, I have a drink. In fact, I'm very happy. I have an in vivo Pinot Noir. Very nice wine.
I have Coke.
You've got a Coke. Well, cheers to you.
You do. What else? I'll talk about something that's not what you do or what I do.
Yeah, let's just talk about what's going on.
This is where Morgan comes in because he goes. What Morgan does very conveniently is he goes and bookmarks like a million stories on the internet and then read headlines.
Oh, there have been a million stories. What about the Robert E. Jones column in the Herald today? That seems to have raised a lot of ire.
I don't know what to make of that, man. I'm sure we've talked about him before on this show.
Have you? He was the Montgomery Burns of the Hutt Valley when I was growing up. So he lived in the house on the hill, and we lived.
Does
down,
he still?
than the I believe he does. I believe he does. I've never been to his house, but you know, rumor has it he lives up on the Western Hills in the Hutt Valley. But bunch of interesting reactions today, I thought, and the one that sort of confused me the most and made me question the makeup of the Twitter population is the number of people calling for him to be stripped of his knighthood.
I don't, is that even a thing? Can you actually? Can that happen?
Yeah, it can. It absolutely can happen. But the weird thing was, a lot of these people were not who I would have considered to be royalists. So, you know, if you're seeking to punish someone by removing their knighthood, surely then it's sort of placing some implied value in the. Yeah,
he probably enjoys being Sir Bob.
He probably does enjoy being Sir Bob. He probably does. But I read the thing. It's just the vaguely satirical rantings of an old wealthy man who isn't told no very often. So
I'm convinced he's just the real life, the real world version of an internet troll.
Yeah, he probably is. But the deep irony is all this outrage, and the outrage has largely lived in Twitter and Facebook. He's not going to see that.
He doesn't care though. He just shits that stuff out into the world, hoping for a, he's just poking at people.
Yeah, he's getting exactly the response. I mean, a bunch of people are saying, you know, the Herald is at fault for publishing it. You know, making the editorial decision to run with the column.
And I actually kind of agree with that. I don't. You know, as much fun as it is to watch him be kind of a jerk and push people's buttons, I'm not sure why the Herald chooses to publish it.
Well, no, you are sure why the Herald chooses to publish it.
Well, I suppose so.
People to read, you know, to controversial columnists are the only columnists worth running, right? But it's a fine line between, you know, controversial and, you know, denigrating to half the population, which I think he probably ended up being. But, you know, he's one of New Zealand's better-selling authors, believe it or not, so...
Yeah, and he's a very interesting man. Like every interview I've ever seen with him is very interesting, despite, you know, if you just kind of cut through all his deliberately provocative bullshit.
That's right.
He does have some fascinating stories and interesting things to offer.
I think punching like Rod Vaughan in the face was a good thing.
Gareth Morgan.
Hey, Morgan said something.
Yeah, I suggested that Bob Jones punching Rod Vaughan in the face was cool. It's funny, and I remember it fondly. And I think if you helicopter over someone who's fly fishing on a little stream up in the hinterland,
you get what you ask for, don't you?
I think you actually deserve it.
Yeah. But poor Rod Vaughan. I mean, the enduring image in the collective consciousness is this vaguely sort of wimpish looking guy with blood streaming down his face.
Yeah.
Rod Vaughan, interestingly, had the hangar next to mine at a Paraki airfield for a while. He's a keen private pilot, very nice guy, but forever besmirched by that one afternoon. I wonder if the owner of the Buttermilk Lake in South Waikato would do the same had the Canberra Live reporter landed her helicopter today. Did you see that?
Doesn't it sound like a bloody dream? Buttermilk Lake. It's like Chocolate Planet. Buttermilk Lake. I want to do a cannonball into that thing. I want to roll in Milo and then dive in.
I know. We ourselves, Mr. Simpson, are from the land of chocolate. there's a consequence of the there's a milk surplus in this country right now. Did you know? So if you're a local cafe, they're offering you the large latte rather than the small. They're upselling to get rid of the milk surplus. But one of the things Fonterra is doing, and they may have been doing this forever in the Waikato, they've found a conveniently out of the way valley, and they are trucking buttermilk to it. So you know, night and day, tankers of buttermilk come and discharge this fatty yellow stuff.
Oh my god, that must stink.
Well, apparently, the Canberra Live reporter, whose name to my discredit, I cannot remember, could smell it from the helicopter.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And instead, they could be making pancakes. We could have free pancakes for everyone.
See, now you're thinking.
Milk in schools.
Free pancakes.
Feed up those kids.
We'd also need a flour surplus as well, though. That's the thing.
Oh, haha. Flour's everywhere.
Mm.
We can. That's it. Campbell, why isn't Campbell doing this? He can get the buttermilk and make pancakes for all the children in the schools.
Well, one word, rancidity.
Well, not that buttermilk. He can get the buttermilk before they dump it. Yes, I'm sure it's a word.
Now you're thinking.
Yeah, this is brilliant. We've fixed the school hunger problem. Also, why am I still paying so much money for milk then if there's more of it than we need?
Because you're a sucker and you live in New Zealand.
Oh, well, fair enough. This is the price we pay for things is the single reason I'd like to move to the States, because everything is so just stupidly cheap.
Now, here's the thing about everything stupidly cheap. It encourages people to consume stuff that they don't need to, and that is literally killing the entire planet and your children.
I don't care. It's fun.
No.
Consuming things you don't need is fun.
No.
It kind of is, I suppose. Yes, you have a point.
Like, you know, I went to buy a pack of M&Ms or something in the States. The smallest pack I could find was like 700 grams or something, maybe more. Brilliant. Way more than I needed.
There's a price to pay for everything, and if it isn't financial, it's something else.
Well, in that case, it would have been, you know, just
diabetes.
Yeah, diabetes. Which apparently can be cured by what diabetes? Oh, raw food diet cures type 1 diabetes. There you go.
No.
Wendell Nissen would probably have something to say about that.
I've been reading naturalnews.com.
It's mistaken.
Well, that sounds a magnificent.
Or also, hydrogen peroxide will cure cancer.
No, I saw you mention that the other day.
I hate those
people. I think it's time for a counter diet I've been thinking about this for a little while. Do you read the Wendell Nissen column in the...
Occasionally, but it makes me angry most of the time.
It makes me angry too, but let's turn that anger into sort of sugary, salty goodness. I propose we introduce the Wendell Nissen diet. And I think you'd know where I'm going with this.
We can't eat anything that has a chemical name?
No. Quite the opposite. Oh. We only eat foods that have been profiled in the Wendell Nissen What's in My Food column.
Oh, excellent.
If you want additives, if you want flavor, this is the place to go. If you want fat, sugar, and salt and all that sort of crunchy, tangy goodness, she's pretty much catalogued the best foods in New Zealand.
Someone should make there should be an interactive website of this. My favorite example of one of those foodstuffs that I bought and looked at the ingredients and go, what the fuck is any of this, is the chocolate sundae pie from Burger King.
Doesn't it have sand in it?
Yeah, it has sand in it. It has silica in it. Yep.
Yeah. Fantastic. It's delicious.
It's so good. It has sand.
Sand, actual silica sand.
That's awesome. Back in my big agency advertising days, we pitched for the Burger King account and we won it.
Did you put chicks on a horse?
That was my agency, yes.
Yay.
Yes, it was not my personal work. But one of the things we did in the pitch, and I'm convinced this day that it won us the pitch. I was standing at the urinal. We had a break. So a pitch is a
this is a good start to a story.
Yes, where it all happens. I have several advertising urinal stories, but the pitch was probably a 3-hour meeting, so quite a long meeting, and we had a half time break. And at the time, Burger King was in New Zealand was owned by two American guys. And one of them and I were standing at the urinal, and I had this idea, which all the others had told me I couldn't put in the meeting. So I thought, screw it, I'll pitch it in the urinal. And my idea for him was to combine the two great foodstuffs of New Zealand, the cheeseburger and the pie. I said, mate, we've got to do a cheeseburger pie.
Why do we not have a cheeseburger pie?
Well, apparently we do now.
Did you make a cheeseburger pie?
Many, many years later, I think BP does one, a cheeseburger pie. Yeah, and I'm sure there are other reasons why we won the business, but I was convinced at the time that it was my urinal suggestion of the cheeseburger pie that brought it home.
But he didn't make the cheeseburger pie. Have you seen the...
he did not.
Have you seen the Robin Williams sitcom about advertising, which I forget the name of?
No, I haven't. Recent?
Very recent. Just started on CBS last few weeks. Robin Williams.
Is there a legal means of watching it in this country?
Depends on your definition of legal, really.
Mm.
If you were, for example, to use a service like Unblock Us or a VPN like discourse.co.nz/VPN, it's not actually our service.
For example.
Then if you went to cbs.com, it would probably just play. And I don't know if that's illegal or not. Pretty sure it's not.
Give it a go. Well, that may soon prove relevant, because the ultra fast fiber ferry is visiting tomorrow. So as of dinner time tomorrow, we'll be plugged into the world and we'll be able to try these things at a reasonable speed.
Oh my god! I just saw the most amazing link in the chat room. Vagina cakes.
Oh, vagina cakes, they're an old thing. But
I saw one ages ago, and I thought, oh, that's a thing. And then I didn't realize it's actually a thing enough that there is a whole series of... Why does that one have teeth? There is a whole... Oh, my God, that one does too. Whole series of photos.
It's a bridal shower tradition in the States.
Baby shower.
Oh, sorry. Yes, that's what I'm. Yeah, baby shower. And with the baby, have you got the one with the little baby's head coming out?
They're all like that.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's the link. I just saw it come up.
Wow. Marvelous. Oh my God, that one's terrible. What is that jam all over there?
So the other genital meme populating Twitter certainly this week has been the four-headed penis. Are we all across that one?
No. So while I was discussing with you ahead of time a little bit of ideas about what things might be in the show, I mentioned animal genitals, and the reason I mentioned that, she'll be so happy that I say this, is my wife went to the zoo today, and when I came home, she said, I saw this huge zebra penis, and I was like, well, I can't really imagine that, and so she Googled zebra penis and showed me a photo of approximately what the zebra penis looked like, and a few minutes later, I said, could you Google giraffe penis, I'm curious, and she said, I already have, it's not that interesting.
Yeah. And was she fibbing?
No, apparently not. The zebra penis is quite something to behold.
Did you inspect the echidna penis link that I sent you earlier?
No, I did not. There was something I was afraid to search for, echidna penis, because I didn't really want it in my search history, but...
No, echidna, E-C-H-I-D-N-A.
Echidna. Oh, that was the other thing, I can't spell echidna.
Yeah, there's the problem. Quite bizarre, and the reason it's bizarre is the marsupials.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I clicked on this.
As our listeners will know, marsupials do have a bit of a track record for unusual penises, and the kangaroo. Yeah, the kangaroo in particular is famous for its bifurcated penis. But the as you're seeing, and I'm sure everyone else is googling, the echidna penis has not two but four branches, which has science baffled, because the echidna vagina has but two. So it's a bit much there, isn't it? It's a bit much for Tuesday night.
I can't. I don't understand. Why so many penis?
No one really knows. It will remain forever a mystery. Maybe this is your answer to Richard Dawkins. You know, if you're a creationist, you can say, well, Richard, echidna penis.
Poorly considered and unexpected segment.
The echidna penis segment?
Yeah.
We used to play a game on the show, Vaughn, called Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Oh, God. Damn it.
Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
I learned
Urban
my lesson.
Dictionary Word of the Week.
Urban Dictionary
Word
of the Week.
I haven't got one yet. You have to wait.
Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Best of Life Hacker.
Urban Dictionary Best of Life Hacker. You better be fast, motherfucker, because if you're going to bring up an ill-advised game that we gave up because it was driving listeners away, you have to have a word ready.
There was one case.
Urban Dictionary.
Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Word of the Week. Do I have to come up with one? Have you got a word?
I'm ready.
Have you got a word?
I haven't got a word.
Am I going to come up with a word?
Okay, all right. It's not a word so much as it's a slogan.
How does the game work?
Well, we read out a word from Urban Dictionary. Are you familiar with Urban Dictionary?
I am.
Okay. What, so we read out a word or an entry from Urban Dictionary, a phrase sometimes, and you have to guess, or anyone else has to guess at the meaning of said word. Explain to us what it means.
Sounds good.
Badger.
So I'm not going to bring out a word so much. It's more of a it's an abbreviation. You'll be familiar with TL, semicolon DR.
Right. I am.
Yep. Okay. Too long. Didn't read. BP, semicolon, DR.
Brown penetrated, democracy revolted.
That's topical.
You like it?
Yep. Morgan, you got a guess?
I'm
going to tell you it doesn't involve penetration. That would give you that hint.
That was the best answer we've ever had.
It was rather poetic.
That was so fast.
Mm. We should be on 7 days. We're wasted. We're wasted here, boys.
Well, I'll have a word to the producers. Sadly, no. It's not that. Have you got one, Morgan? You going to have a crack?
I'm Asian.
Oh, good. It's behind paywall. Didn't read.
Mm. Ah, nice. Nice and timely. So when does the Herald paywall come in? There's all sorts of rumours. I hear February.
Can't wait. They've done it before, haven't they? Didn't they have? They used to have their archives behind the paywall.
Yes, they did. The feature of the Herald's online presence that endlessly fascinates me is its puppy-like persistence in asking if I would like to give it my location. Has anyone ever told the Herald where they are before reading an article on their phone?
I don't believe it.
What do we get in exchange for that?
It doesn't say.
Do we get localized weather?
Well, I don't. My best theory that is if you click OK, a helicopter full of assassins will appear. That would be pretty much the Taken equivalent.
That's not going to be the case because the news business, especially online, not so profitable anymore. They can't afford helicopters full of assassins. You might get like
a maxi taxi,
a Nissan Cube with an angry auntie in it. But
I like it.
It's probably about as much as you can imagine.
Or a super shuttle, because they'd have to go around several assassinations, and the assassins would get really pissed off because they're not going straight to the one they want, but they're saving money.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly what happens.
Let's try that sometime.
Urban Dictionary word of the week. Your word, Dylan, is Irish handcuffs.
Irish handcuffs.
Oh, no. This my mind just boggled. Did you hear it?
Sorry, I did. There was something. I thought it might have just been me bumping the microphone, but you can never tell. Irish handcuffs, it's clearly not a sexual thing.
Why is that clear? That was my boggling.
Yeah, I know, because if it is a sexual thing, it's so horrible that I can't even begin to describe it. It's just green handcuffs. It's just normal handcuffs, but they're coloured green for St. Patrick's Day. The police in... where's that really Irish city in the States?
Boston.
Police in whatever that really Irish city. Boston. Boston? The police in Boston used them on St. Patrick's Day to arrest the thousands of drunken revelers.
And Vaughan, Irish handcuffs.
Well, I have a theory, but if you believe that it's not sexual, then my theory doesn't work. I'm just going to post the link because it's happening right now in the United States anyway, in different time zones. That's my answer. I'm not
going to say
it.
Oh, my God.
There you go. General knowledge, people.
Oh, the answer is when a person is carrying an alcoholic beverage in both hands at the same time. Irish handcuffs.
Irish handcuffs. I like it. That's quite
benign. So nothing to do with International Fisting Day?
No.
Nothing at all.
October the 21st. Good to
know. So this is when you just, I think it's called dapping. Is that what it is? You dap your fist, you go, nice to see you, and you go, fist, dap.
Yeah, it's terrorist fist bumps, that's it.
That's right, as popularized by Oprah. by Obama. famous people.
Irish handcuffs. I knew it had something to do with drinking, because, you know.
Because racism, why not?
Exactly.
So the Robin Williams show you were talking about is called The Crazy Ones.
The Crazy Ones.
Have you actually watched it?
Is it an Apple reference? Is that what
yes,
that is?
It is an Apple reference to that. Yes, exactly. It is. In the first episode, they eventually, like three quarters of the way through, make some reference to that series of Apple ads.
Here's to the Crazy Ones.
The Crazy Ones.
Mm. Really. That sounds fun.
Something an advertising man would get. The other thing that you do that I was going to mention was TED.
Yes. Yes, I do. I do the TED.
Do you present at TED or do you just make other people present?
I make other people present. I'm content director at TEDx Auckland, which is the TED itself in the United States has been licensed into thousands of locations worldwide, and Auckland is one of them.
Fake TEDs.
Big TEDs and little TEDs.
Fake
TEDs, I suppose. Yeah, replica TEDs, Ripley TEDs, clone TEDs. And about a year and a half ago, some people asked me if I would help out with the Auckland one, and before I knew it, I was content director.
That's helping out?
Yeah. Yeah, sort of one of the many consequences of my usual policy of saying yes to almost everything.
Yeah, the other consequence of that is you're talking to us now.
Yes, I am. That's right. So it's a very cool job because along with Elliot Blade, who's the producer who does most of the work, I get to meet a truckload of really, really interesting people, hear about their ideas, try and work out whether or not they have an idea in them, which is harder than it seems. And if they do, work with them to sometimes co-create or sometimes just, you know, comment on their talk and then go through the rehearsal process. And we have one of the most rigorous, I'm told, rehearsal processes in the TED world.
Well, that's something. Something. Did you see the story about the comedian pranking TED?
Oh, doing a fake TED talk, or what was he doing?
Yeah, I think it was a fake TED talk, basically parodying, skewering TED.
Oh, very easy to do. I mean, it's easy to take the piss out of it. And don't get me wrong, I'm no TED disciple, and a lot of people are. You know, people will say, you know, what are your top 20 TED talks? And they'll sit around and discuss them. I don't think I've watched 20 TED talks, and we've done more than 20 ourselves. I just think it's really good.
that's a little disheartening.
Well, no, not really. I just like great ideas, and I happen to like great New Zealand ideas, and TED is a really good brand to help bring those out of the woodwork. But more importantly, it's a channel to get them onto the world stage. You know, come and watch this cool TED talk from New Zealand. We'll get more people watching than come and, you know, watch this talk from New Zealand.
Did all the New Zealand ones go up on the TED site? Are they there to watch?
They all go up on the there's a TEDx site which is run centrally out of, you know, TED Mothership, and from that a bunch get sort of pushed into the main TED site. I'm not intimate with the whole video side of things. My sort of job starts, well, I get involved in the editing of the videos, overseeing that, sort of commenting on that and giving a last input to that. But once they're out there,
the most important part.
What's that? Just coming in and saying it's
no, the editing. The editing's the most important.
Oh, editing's very, very important. It's that final 95%, I think, that makes it. Yeah. But no, it's good fun. And we had it's sort of hard to measure or compare, but we believe in Auckland we have one of the largest TEDx events in the world, certainly bigger than TED itself, at about 2,500 people in the room.
You've only done two in Auckland.
I know.
So you haven't yet started to attract the crazies. You haven't got anti-fluoride campaigners or God only knows what else. Anti-fluoride,
well, I comes did, to mind.
Anti-vax.
Yeah. I walking the lobby this year because I ended up doing the MC duties as well. So when I walked down the lobby, because that's the only way you can get to know who actually comes to these
things. That's the way you click two paychecks. Good work.
Well, yeah. But it's also the way I ended up being approached by quite a bunch of crazies. And there are a lot of people out there who want to use that TED stage to get their fringe idea into the spotlight. And as you know, TED HQ recently put out a blog on what they're calling bad science. So they're aware that people are using, you know, this TED brand to get their poorly proven agendas across. And they've asked us all to be a bit more rigorous about that. So that'll be a challenge for next year.
Ben wants to give a talk at the next Ben Gracewood, TV's Ben Gracewood, wants to give a talk at the next TEDx about men's rights.
His name is Mercedes-Ben.
Mercedes-Ben.
Mercedes-Ben, yes.
Yeah, he wants to give a talk about men's rights. He thinks men don't have enough rights in this modern matriarchal society.
If only he knew someone on the TED team, he could ask them.
Yeah.
And then his theory could be subject to rigorous scientific scrutiny.
No, he won't have any of that.
No.
Although you actually could get him up on stage to talk about how big IT is a waste of stupidness.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'd have a story in him. He's a, you know, interesting guy.
He's a virgin. Yeah.
This episode of the Discourse Weekly Show is brought to you by pickandmix.org. Pickandmix.org, showcasing the awesome work and lifestyle choices we all get to pick and mix from. Thank you.
Hey, that's kind of relevant to what you were just talking about.
What is that?
Tell me more. This is the thing that Michelle Dickinson and Lillian Grace set up and a bunch of others, right?
Is that correct? Including also the most important member of that group.
Who's that?
Sasha Judd.
Oh, and Sasha Judd. There you go. Yeah. I've only sort of seen it on the fringes. Yeah, so.
I'm scrolling.
Yeah, so two of those people were TED speakers as well. So,
I know these names. I know some of these names.
I don't really like watching TEDx because
I don't know. There are people I see on Twitter.
Kind of, I mean, due respect to the Auckland one, I'm sure all the speakers were wonderful, but the TEDx videos I've watched are complete fucking rubbish compared to the TED Mothership videos. And they do. Now, it sounds like the...
Is it content or production value or...
Content. No, content. The speakers just aren't as good. Now, admittedly, I haven't watched Auckland ones. So, you know, and it sounds like if there was none of the woo bullshit in the Auckland one, then that's a step up. But there does seem to be a lot of...
Have a look. Give us a chance. You know, comment next week. But that is going to be the consequence of the way they license these things. You know, as I said, there are thousands of TED events. Some of them, I know you can just say, you know, once you've agreed to be a speaker, you can just turn up on the day and give your talk. We are a lot more rigorous. So, you know, we've probably met each of our speakers 3 times before we decide whether or not they'll be a speaker that year. And in our rehearsal process, which goes over 4 or 5 weeks, they will each rehearse in front of a group up to 6 times. So, you know, our content and the delivery of it is pretty sharp, I think.
See, I can't remember. I looked at the last TEDx, and beyond the fact that it coincided with the weekend that my parents were taking all the children away, so frankly, there was no way I was going to waste that on, you know, boring
Hell
speakers.
No.
But I can't remember. I looked at the thing, and I don't remember any of the talks or speakers grabbing my attention. I can't remember why, though. I looked at them, and I was like,
Do you know, the insight that sort of hit me minutes before I went onto stage and had to give the introduction to the whole day is there's real value in just setting aside what you think will and won't be an interesting talk and just turning up for the day. It's sort of anti-curation.
Well, I mean, that's always what I've found about going to any event with his speakers. I've often found that my preconceptions were completely wrong.
That's right, because and that's the opposite of the video experience. You know, you on videos, you go and you watch the videos that you think might interest you, and you know they may or may not turn out to be interesting, and they're unlikely to be challenging. You know, if you're selecting them because you know you've sought them out. The live experience is the opposite of that. Oh, I think it was pretty powerful, but as I say, I'm not a TED groupie at all. I'm just a fan of the ideas, and it's a way of getting them across.
I believe you.
I've actually been preparing a talk for a while, and I'm not sure where I'm going to deliver it. But I'm not at TED, obviously.
Why is that obvious?
I don't really like TED that much.
Fair enough.
It's an echo chamber, is why. But the talk I'm preparing, I honestly believe I'm going to change some lives, and I'm going to be very selective about where I deliver it. I'm not even joking, but I'm very proud of what I've got so far. Now I just need to find somewhere that will let me talk to people, because honestly, in the past, my presentations haven't all gone exactly according to plan. Sometimes because of things like Urban Dictionary Word of the Week, though, you know, sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. And I have a strong feeling that you're not going to actually share the content of your talk with us this evening.
No, it's inspirational, and also the opposite of that, because some people need a little bit of the opposite.
What is the opposite of inspirational? Demotivational.
Well, I mean, it's not about demotivating people. It's about telling people to stop wasting their time thinking about dreamy stuff and actually focus on real stuff. And if it's something you're never really going to do, stop thinking about it. Move on.
Yep.
And I think that's actually quite an important message for a lot of us, particularly in technology. People who build, you know, these little web things, we are distracted by some of our silly little dream things when we should be working on the real stuff.
So what's your day job?
I build lots of web stuff.
Yes?
Yeah.
What's an example of that?
Stuff at the University of Auckland.
Ah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I see that NZ Ben's just given us a tweet out saying we're live and lonely.
The chat room's almost empty. I think people are probably watching this Nokia thing, the people that would normally be in the chat room.
It wasn't so long ago where whenever a new phone would come out or with a non-Nokia operating system, we'd all go, yeah, it's okay, but it's not Nokia. That wasn't so long ago. You know, when it was the gold standard of usability. Do you remember those days?
Why is the chat room talking about semen like food replacements? Does anyone know?
I don't know. Well, it was semen food like spinach, like Popeye the Sailor Man used to eat. That's what you're talking about, of course, isn't it?
Soylent.
Oh, Soylent. Oh, you know what that is?
I know exactly what Soylent Green is, but Soylent is also
something. People!
Yeah. Soylent is a tough sell, as it's impossible to try it and not think about eating sperm. But it's a cult hit among a certain Silicon Valley subset, which swears it's actually a viable alternative to the venerable human pastime of chewing. So basically, it is kind of meal replacement shakes is what it is. And they've just gotten $1.5 million of funding.
Good God.
Seems like too much to work on such a kind of a trivial thing. There are heaps of meal replacement options available already. Copy the best of them and make them taste good.
How did they get the funding? Was it just VC or did they kickstart?
That's a good question. I would probably have to click through to TechCrunch to get all of the details, and I'm not actually willing. I'm not willing to do that because fuck this.
And we're not here to read out the internet. Either way, whether it was crowdfunded or VC, I think the time must be right for my own idea, which solves the problem of that quite large population, particularly affluent liberal Californians, who want to eat beef but don't want to be involved or responsible for the slaughter of animals. So yeah. It's quite a big group. And the answer, and you're probably way ahead of me here already, is slaughter-free beef. Are you familiar with the concept?
This is where you cut a bit off without killing the animal.
Yeah, you've heard of it. So slaughter-free beef combines painless amputation, so using, you know, advanced sort of anesthetic techniques with the sort of the post-Iraq war technology of bovine prosthetics. So, it does what it says in the tin. A bovine prosthetic is basically a replacement limb for a cow. And the way slaughter-free beef works is the limb is sort of surgically and painlessly removed, replaced with a bovine prosthetic. You get to enjoy your delicious, tasty beef and no animal has suffered for you. Pretty cool, huh?
It's hilarious. it would be so much more expensive to do that than to just.
Oh, but this, like I say, there's a sweet spot, and it's your affluent, liberal, sort of animal fancying Californian people. But I can just see, you know, the restaurants that start offering slaughter free beef on the menu are going to have a real competitive edge.
We need to genetically engineer these cows and cross them with what are the lizards that can regrow their tails?
Oh,
anyway,
yes,
whatever those are, we'll cross them with skinks. Skinks, probably.
Skink cow.
Give them like some worm and lizard DNA, and then everyone can be happy. And you know, you get any number of drumsticks off the same chicken.
I think you're just lapsing into science fiction now. But I thought, yeah, the thing with slaughter-free beef is the technology's all there. You know, we're pretty good at making prosthetic limbs. The veterinary amputation thing's pretty forward. So. It's an idea waiting to happen. Maybe it needs to be demand-driven. Maybe we just need to start going to restaurants and asking if they have slaughter-free beef.
I'm not going to. I was a vegetarian for a couple of years, and if you're not prepared to eat meat, you should be vegetarian. Morally, it does appear to be quite superior, and you have a much smaller carbon footprint if that's important to you.
Yeah, but it was yucky. It doesn't taste nice.
Being a vegetarian. Oh, well, it does require that you actually cook more thoughtfully. I wouldn't say that it was yucky or didn't taste nice. There's a whole lot of options available to you in the entire world that don't necessarily involve using animal protein.
You're not going to tell me you like brown rice, are you?
No, I like white basmati, but I love rice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
think anyone who tells you they like brown rice, you should question anything else that they've ever told you.
I want to question all the people who claim to like quinoa as well, because what the hell? It's not
exactly.
Nice.
I don't need ancient grains in my life.
No. I like the modern ones. It was survival of the fittest. We chose our favorite. It's already been done.
That's right.
And our favorite.
We've evolved toward little white shiny rice grains.
Brown rice is not the king of rice. Basmati. All day, every day.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Now, unfortunately, my favorite preparation of that did involve tuna. And as a vegetarian, that wasn't very helpful. But, you know, there were other options. Now, I was never a vegan. I did always enjoy cheese and other dairy. And so I don't know. I don't know how difficult life gets if you don't have cheese. You know, because if people want to get pizza as a vegetarian, it's pretty easy to get a vegetarian pizza. But if you want a vegan pizza, you are going to be fucking disappointed.
And all that shit just slides right off.
And it's just, I mean, pizza is just a fancy form of bread anyway. And take the cheese off and it's not fancy anymore. It's just really low quality bread suddenly with really crappy vegetables on it. And you just get to be miserable.
That's a really depressing insight. You should put that into your demotivational speech. Now, I was out shopping for fish the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that for $12.99 per kilo at one of the fish marts, you know, down the North Wharf area, you can buy shark fins. Yum, yum.
Really?
They should be fucking banned in this country.
They should be what?
They should be banned in this country. Shark finning is absolutely abhorrent.
I had no idea you could buy them here.
Yeah, $12.99 a kilo. Two things surprised me. Firstly, that you could just go in and buy them. I was going to take a photograph, but I was scared they might think I was Greenpeace and, you know, throw me to the Russians waiting outside the door. But the second thing, they're very small. They're very small. They're the size of, I don't know, twice the size of an iPhone, these right. little shark fins.
Twice the size of an iPhone, so really small and approximately the size of one Android phone?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, the size of an Android, a phablet. About the size of a phablet, listeners, the shark fins. But there's an important distinction to be made. The prohibition and what Greenpeace is against is shark finning, right?
Yeah.
Not shark right. fins. So let's just charitably assume that somewhere else in this fish shop was the other 99% of these fins, and they were being sold as fish and chips. But yeah, it sort of surprised me to see them on
we do eat shark, sale. Don't we?
Not much.
We eat a shitload of shark.
Nah, not anymore. Stuff. Not so much now because there's too much mercury in it, right? Apex predator.
Apex.
Yeah, apex predator, but it also means that it comes with an extra serving of mercury, which mercury is not great. You know, you can use it to starch your collars, but you don't particularly want it in your brain, and that seems to be where it migrates to if you eat too much shark, or indeed
tuna. Look how much fun it is to play with.
So now the thing about small, you should not be playing with mercury. The thing about the small shark fins is that sharks have lots of different fins, you know, so it might be that that place could only afford to get you know, a shipment of the
ventral fins.
Yeah. And the big back one. But I take your point on the shark finning thing versus actually taking a whole fish. The shark finning thing is the part that I find completely abhorrent, which is, for the very few listeners who won't know this, they catch a shark, they cut off the fins, and then they throw the rest of the usually still live shark back in, but minus any ability to swim, which is pretty bloody awful. It's a terrible waste of resources. And it's just one
of
many...
Yeah, that does seem silly.
It's just one of many ways that industrial fishing is terribly wasteful. And we've heard a pretty unpleasant story about what industrial fishing has been doing, you know, further around the Pacific lately just this week. But I don't actually have it to hand. But that was about essentially kind of the Dead Sea up, not in the Dead Sea Scrolls sort of way, but as in all of the fish life has been harvested and much of it wasted up, I think it was up around Papua New Guinea and even off heading out into the Pacific. So, I mean, we've known for a long time.
With the exception.
Yeah.
Exception being the jellyfish. Lots and lots of jellyfish around.
Delicious jellyfish.
The other thing I read about recently was the Chinese fishing fleets sailing well outside of Chinese waters and fishing all around the rest of Asia.
Yeah.
And Japan, South Korea.
Yeah. Japan have already essentially stripped the entire Pacific of tuna, and they now fish for it in the Atlantic, which is pretty fucking far away, you'd have to say.
That is a long way to go for tuna.
Yep. But when it's a couple of $100,000 a fish, it's worth it.
Yeah, man, tuna can be pretty exciting. I almost caught a fish in the weekend, almost.
Did you go fishing? But you've always, when I suggested fishing, you were always really dismissive.
I didn't really go fishing. Went up to my parents' house with my kids and we went to a wharf and put a fishing line in the water.
Okay. Well, sometimes you've got to come out with us on the boat, because going out on the boat is so much fun. and it's real fishing.
There was very little expectation of catching a fish.
Well, that's not a fun way to fish. I think a fun way to fish is when you are throwing back big ones in the hopes of getting a really big one. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, didn't have that problem. Yeah.
Come out on the boat. We're going out on the boat this weekend, and there's no room for you. Very sorry.
Thank you.
It's so much fun. I tell you what, it's so much fun. There is a lot of cleaning and so on, though.
I think I'm going to the Matakana School Fair this weekend.
Wow, that sounds awesome, Dylan.
It's a pretty awesome school fair. Last time I went there, I went flying in a helicopter. So, you know.
Ooh. That does sound like a hoot.
As school fairs go, I went to the huge day out in Warkworth, part of the Ko-Fi Festival.
Golly.
Nice.
That's what I did last weekend.
That sounds...
I'm living it up, bro.
that sounds amazing. So the chat room wants to know when we're talking about telly. And what the chat room specifically means is, when are we going to talk about Scandal?
I thought we did. Is it on tonight? It is on tonight.
What are they up to in New Zealand? Because I'm watching Netflix.
Isn't it just the same show over and over again? Between a death and a sex scandal, and another death and another sex scandal. Isn't that about it?
I'm sort of partway into the second series now, and the whole thing's getting really dark. It caught me a little off guard, actually. I watched some and I was like, oh, this is, whoa, I wasn't
predicting this. I don't know. I watched a couple of episodes, and it just seemed to me that it was almost... opinion poll driven television drama. They went, okay, what sort of stories rate in the newspapers and on the websites and things, and let's just back engineer a TV series around it. I don't know. It just didn't seem to have that spark to me. Does it get better?
Oh, no, so the New Zealand one, they're just up to the beginning of season two. They must just be screening episode 5 of season 2 tonight, which I've watched through. I'll read the synopsis. When the wife of a governor is raped, the governor takes the law into his own hands and then asks Olivia and her team to come in and clean up his mess. Which is still at that stage where it's you know, minor political issue, clean up, minor political issue, clean up. But it really does start getting very dark and intense, and a much bigger overall story arc.
Dark and intense. And also, Kerry Washington, who plays Olivia Pope, who is, I guess, the heroine, is the most beautiful woman on television right now.
That is highly possible.
And she wears possibly the best dresses, although the big boss on Suits, you know, she'd probably be fighting out for the best dressed. Good God.
Oh, I haven't watched Suits for ages. God, I love that show.
Huck is a terrifying evil genius.
Oh yeah, and that gets so much more as season 2 develops.
I watched season 1 avidly, and I think I've kind of fallen away because, you know, there's so much going on since probably midway through season. Actually, no, I watched season 2 as well. I guess probably the beginning of season 3 I sort of lost it. Another show that we can talk about that I actually have been watching, though, is Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
What on earth is... Oh, a Marvel. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. Tell me more.
Well, all you need to know, and I think I sort of mentioned this, Dylan, last week, just as the final music started to rise up.
I'd already mentally checked out by then.
Yeah. It somehow has a 7.3 on IMDb. Honestly, I think that's a little bit high. It's Agent Coulson, who was a fan favorite in a bunch of the Marvel films, you know, all those little, what do they call them, stingers after the credits. He seemed to be in a bunch of them, alternating with Samuel L. Jackson, and like Thor and Iron Man and so on, trying to convince them all to join this new S.H.I.E.L.D. program. And they eventually did, and that was Avengers. Now, this Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of the human agents in this group, S.H.I.E.L.D. None of them have superpowers, and they travel around dealing with, you know, stuff, artifacts and stuff. And it's all right. The first episode was terrible. Oh, my God. I can't believe that they didn't get instantly cancelled, but apparently they had a very large viewership, and enough so that they got to make to broadcast more, and it is slowly improving, but it's still a bit cheesy.
Melanie's been watching. She quite enjoyed it. She was a big fan of Avengers and stuff.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, my all-time favorite thing on television right now is, now when is it running? Sunday nights? The Bond movies.
Yeah.
they're pretty much running every Bond movie. It's like every Sunday night is Christmas Day on TV One. Absolutely brilliant. And bringing home very much how close to the bone the Austin Powers movies were.
They were really good, weren't they?
They were very, very good.
There's some podcast I heard about recently that just basically every episode of the podcast is just discussion of one of the Bond movies.
That sounds, if I were listening to this podcast right now, I'd Apple Stop, W that shit.
Yeah, I'm not telling you what it's called because I can't remember. So
search for another one.
So that's fine.
But
I think the last time TVNZ, from memory, the last time TVNZ played all the Bond films, they had an issue with licensing, which meant they missed like three in the middle somewhere.
Ah.
Which is always the problem with television films.
I've got to say, the one that let me down was Moonraker. Which, in my memory, was all about space shuttles, but after about 45 minutes, at which time I gave up and went to bed, there was no space shuttle at that point. I think it was like 90% cheap to film stuff on the ground and 10% simulated space shuttle, and I just couldn't make it through to the 10%, unfortunately.
The chat room is suggesting House of Cards.
I wish I haven't watched House of Cards yet. I started to watch the first episode and I got about 12 minutes in and I was just like, I'm really not in the right space for this right now, and I haven't gone back yet.
It's really good. It's been recommended to me several times, but I haven't picked it up. As another Netflix one called Orange is the New Black.
Yep, again, that keeps hovering on my Netflix thing. I keep going, oh, I should really watch that. Everyone says I should watch it. I should totally watch it.
So this is very, very exciting stuff. It's all ahead of me once I have fiber.
Mm. Do you have Netflix?
No, I have nothing. I have nothing. I'm very honest. I'm very
Netflix. You're paying. You're paying for the content.
I know you are. I've read all the justifications, but
it's not really justification. It's just
whining.
It's a coping mechanism.
I know.
I've talk about is the whole ridiculousness of licensing and the reality of the business model versus what we want as an audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that occurred to me this week, you know, considering my fiber future, was I would be very happy if there were a version of the Sky license, or they don't even call it a license, do they? They just call it a subscription, which was online only. In exchange for which I could return their, you know, big ugly box and pay a reduced rate. But such a thing seems not to exist.
Sky and reduced rate.
Yeah, I mean, the best suggestions I've had from the internet have been, you know, to give someone who does have a Sky subscription a box of beer in exchange for their login, which is certainly affordable, but not necessarily ethical.
Depends on the beer. It could get quite expensive.
It could. If it were Wellington craft beer at, you know, $15 a bottle, perhaps, yes.
Which is bullshit, incidentally, and it's yet another way that New Zealand consumers get fucked over. It's absolutely ludicrous how much we pay for craft beer in New Zealand. You go to every other country aside from perhaps Australia, where they also have pretty expensive beer. And we are, like, an order of magnitude more expensive for the same fucking stuff. Now, you know, we can make claims about, oh, it's special bloody beer. But every country that is into craft beer now has special bloody beer. You know, when Belgian, you know, venerable Belgian breweries who make stuff that is actually premium here, not the fake premium stuff, the fake premium lager stuff, when that's like €1.50 for a 750ml bottle at every goddamn supermarket and paying, you know, for the same thing here, it'd be $15. It is nuts. It is absolutely nuts, and I don't see any way to get back from it.
I don't know. I paid $1.50 for my 700-gram bag of M&Ms.
Yeah.
that'd be like $6 here.
Yeah.
See? It's all the same. We want to go and live somewhere where everything is stupidly cheap.
Yeah.
I want Walmart.
Yeah.
Oh, I do like a good Walmart.
I realize all the problems with Walmart, but I like it anyway.
It's a fun experience. It really is, and the warehouse doesn't quite measure up, does it? In that respect,
really doesn't.
It really doesn't. Although I see from the current advertising campaign that we should all have a second look at the warehouse, which is kind of the strategy just being translated directly into a script. But why not give it a crack?
I used to do warehouse retail ads. I used to
look
used to make
at
them.
You working
and
for who?
Like, that was ridiculous. We used to do one 30-second ad and two 15-second ads, and we had a whole day to do it, and we used to do it in a linear edit suite, which won't mean much to anyone who listens, but it was the most crazy way to do it. But we, well, we didn't. I didn't, because I was editing, but the client ate lunch and drank beers and wines and sat in the back of the edit suite, and we talked shit all day and made the three ads.
Mm-hmm.
That was the way. Bet they don't do it like that anymore.
No.
Five.
No.
And this is the end of the show.
Four.
Is it?
How did that happen?
Three.
How did that happen? It's just flown by. I haven't even finished my wine.
Two. One. You're listening to the weekly show on Whisk.
Right, we're using that one.
Who
that was
that?
An experiment.
Yep. So, what do you reckon, Dills?
I liked it. I think we should stick with this approximate concept.
This is pretty much the original discourse, Dylan.
Just not with me.
I hate to break it to you, but the first 50 episodes of Discourse were exactly like that.
No, they weren't. They had a shorter guest segment and they had specific news items.
I guess that's true. So it was slightly more structured, but
yeah, no structure. Random chat.
You know, it's safer
and
having
go and change a nappy in the middle.
No,
that wasn't changing a nappy. That was removing a baby, soothing a baby, giving a baby some Pamol and putting him back to bed.
You are fucking good at that.
Magical shit, that Pamol.
I didn't even notice that you'd gone until you said you were back.
Excellent. It's lucky I didn't try and do that during your quiet phase.
Yeah. So how long did I last? Man, it was a struggle. I tell you what.
I have no idea.
It felt like a long time. It felt like 15 minutes or something.
Thank you for joining us, Vaughn. The show we release typically on a Thursday morning. Actually, not typically, all the time.
5:45 a.m. Thursday morning. Week in, week out.
Nate, who was the who did the female sting?
That's my lady friend.
Your lady friend? That was someone famous. Her voice sounded familiar, but maybe not.
Might be familiar, and we don't talk about that.
It might be familiar. We don't talk about that. Okay, you're a man of mystery. I like it.
My life is an open book, but there are people around my life who I don't talk about.
Okay, I'll get Cameron Slater onto it.
Oh man, why don't we talk about him? God,
we should. We need to get him on.
Yeah,
it's very easy to not talk about it. I'm so over it because now. We're still recording and there's a good chance that this will go into the show, just so you know. And also the stream is still up.
What right. if I say...
The stream is still up.
Elephant testicles. Will it still go on the show if I say elephant testicles?
Yes. Well, I mean, we talked about four-headed and bifurcated peni. So talking about...
Oh, God. Do we have to go there again?
That was just biology.
Yes. And elephant testicles, also biology. So
what if I say women can't drive?
I am absolutely amazed by how kind of disgusting and strange Len Brown is. Masturbating in the Merrill Chamber is so bizarre because I've never been in there, but I can't imagine that it's like, I don't think that there are posters of half naked ladies on the walls. It's not like it is, you know, a panel beater's office. There will be, I expect.
Okay, so you wouldn't masturbate in the Merrill Chamber, but you'd totally have a wank in a panel beater's office. Is that what you're saying?
They wouldn't be able to stop me, Dylan.
That's why your car has so many dings. No one will fix it.
I'm banned from everywhere.
we'll just put some bog in there. Oh, we've run out of bog.
Give me a minute.
No, no worries. Yeah, here's the epoxy.
But I don't care that he's masturbated in the Merrill Chamber, and I don't care that he had consensual sex with an adult woman. I just don't care about that at all. It doesn't make any difference to me. And so the fact that
there's probably 10% of the web traffic in New Zealand this week has been people claiming that they're not interested in the Len Brown story.
Yeah.
I think I made my point.
Well, I'm not saying that I'm not interested. I don't care that he did that. I don't think that that has a bearing on his ability to be mayor.
That aspect of the story is the least interesting part of it.
Yeah. So the interesting part.
Oh, there are many.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep going.
the interesting part is the own goal that these inept, newbie, right-wing strategists, so-called strategists, managed to score. They shot themselves in the feet, you know, repeatedly. They've got paper trails going back where they conspire against Len Brown, talk about how he's going to, he's definitely going to resign. And meanwhile, they're lying in public, and then the paper trail's clearly coming out, and they must have known that there'd be a paper trail because they were talking to one another in fucking text. They were talking on Facebook. It's like, you Muppets, are you kidding me? I really hope that the woman, Bevan Chang?
Bevan Chuang.
Chuang? I hope that she is able to recover from this. I hope that the only people who are injured by this are the men that tried to manipulate her. It would be, because it sounds like she was actually an okay operator, but it seems like she had she was under a lot of pressure and she really buckled to it. And that all seems very unwise.
She seems to be quite easily swayed, is the impression I got.
Yeah.
A little bit naive, quite easily swayed. There was a point in one of the conversations that was relayed on The Nation where she said to, oh, I love the name, Luigi Wiwiji.
Yeah.
Where she said something along the lines of, I need a job, I need money. And he said, you won't after tomorrow.
Yeah,
I saw that too. How is she going to, what? Not only is she not getting a job now.
That is an interesting point. I mean, perhaps in the States or UK, notoriety can easily equate with wealth. You know, you can sell your story and that can keep you going for quite some time. But, you know, she does need a job. She does need money. I think the one social network she hasn't shut down is LinkedIn.
At the moment.
Yeah, and I saw yesterday there was a spate of people going, oh, wow, look who just sent me a friend request or a connection request. And she was sending out requests on LinkedIn. So, I mean, you forget that girls got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
If she were in the States, she'd have a reality show already.
Absolutely, absolutely. But here, you know, she might get $10,000 on the Women's Day or whatever it is they throw around, and that's not going to last very long. So, an unfortunate position for her to be in.
Yeah, that's right. Unfortunate position to be in. You know, a lot of it is her own fault. But the this Luigi Wiwiji creep, what a dirtbag. Paulino also, what a dirtbag. And hopefully that's the end of his career, because
maybe not. I mean, there's nothing unlike the paper trails and text trails that connect other people to this. There's not quite the smoking gun with Paulino that I've seen anyway. By way of disclosure, the other person to see John Paulino on Sunday night was me.
Golly. Did you meet him in a car park?
No, I didn't. He turned up at a birthday party I was at.
So there's nothing to disclose regards to your car park meetings. You don't have an affidavit coming out soon.
No, I don't. Although several of us were playing basketball in the driveway. So is that a car park? I don't know.
I think that qualifies. You also met John Paulino in a car park on Sunday. You heard it here.
There was a car nearby and it was parked. But I don't know. It seems at odds with you know, what little I know of him.
I think clearly he knew about it. Whether he instigated it or someone came to him and went, look at this great thing that's going to happen. But
I think on both sides of it, the you know, Brown and Paulino, those two guys seem to be the least at fault's a funny word, but it's the people who surround them in each case that seem to have been the most devious.
Yeah,
you know, where, you know, the whoever sent those texts, you know, from that secret burner cell phone that
did the texts even exist? Have we seen any of them?
I don't know if there's a question of whether or not a text exists, because
a number of people claim to have received the same thing,
including government ministers and. All right. All sorts of people have received them.
Yeah.
All from the same phone.
Yeah.
Same number.
So I don't think there's any doubt that they were sent. And whoever sent those had extraordinarily bad judgment. If they were in Len Brown's camp, if they were on the right, then they served their purpose. But it seems like some crazy conspiracy talk to suggest that, you know, it was Cameron Slater or someone who had actually sent those. It does feel
double. Do you think, trying to spoof, as the intelligence community would say?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, his thing, though, was he said he wasn't even sure he was going to publish the story until he got the text messages, and I'm like, oh, I don't think that's true.
That. Yeah, don't believe that at all. Yeah. Not even for a second.
But again, and this is I don't know when this happened to me, maybe 18 months ago, somehow in that time, Cameron Slater has become someone that's moved from the fringe to being at the heart of the news machine.
Which is bizarre, and I hope it doesn't last too much longer. I think it's New Zealand journalists are inherently quite lazy, many of them. And so if a story presents itself, and he does, you know, wrap them up and tie them with a bow, if a story presents itself, they will jump right on it. And anyone could present those stories, and they'd probably jump right on them, you know. He just seems to be the best at doing it right now.
Keith Ings presented at least one. That they've jumped right on. It's not a bad way to operate. It's just that his stories are such typical.
Well, he's working on another now around members of parliament and their sort of real estate.
Keith, yes,
yeah, their sort of concealed real estate holdings. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But that's the things that shifted is, you know, newsrooms are shadows of what they once were. There's not the money coming in through advertising or subscriptions or whatever. There's
clearly no sub-editors in there.
No, there are clearly no sub-editors. But there aren't enough journalists. So, you know, if you're not getting enough paid people, you end up with the passionate people. And it's a fine line between passionate and mad as a fucking snake.
Yeah.
That is a fine line.
It is. But... it's an exciting time. And then several commentators have said that had the Herald been brought this story, they would not have run with it. But I don't know, that just sounds like
garbage. Of course they would have. Media. They definitely would have.
I think absolutely, I think it's garbage.
Yeah,
that's pretty hard thing to believe, unless there was... they would have run with it.
But interesting, the Herald, which was originally sort of on the scandalous bandwagon on Wednesday, I think, was would have broken into the Herald, very quickly aligned itself with Brown. And looking at, have you seen the cover today of the print edition?
No,
I have not.
So I happen to have it damping my
microphone. They still make a paper version of the Herald.
Yeah, they do. Well, we had a puppy. He's big now, but the subscription just rolled over. There's a half page photograph of Len and Mrs. Brown, and you know he's sitting there smugly smiling on the couch. She's looking lovingly at him. His hand is on her knee. But what you don't get until you look at the small print is this is a stock photo from the dark distant past.
Oh my god!
And that is a really powerful editorial choice.
That is.
And most people looking at that would go, "Oh, look at that! Oh." You know, big headline, I need to redeem myself with my wife, hand on knee. You know, this is very much the picture of a together couple. But this picture is from I don't know when, but it's certainly not from this week. So a really interesting editorial decision by the Herald.
Haven't just illustrated it poorly with some think stock photo of a random mare.
When's the last time we saw his wife, whose name I don't know?
Isn't it Sean?
Yes, it is.
I don't think she's appeared in public. She was out driving with him to get some coffee at the weekend or something.
The lawyer's office where they're going to get a divorce.
Well, she is a divorce lawyer.
That's handy.
That's the thing. That's her day job.
Right. If it turns out that they have like an open thing, then awesome. Go for it. But I bet one of the terms was you better not fucking embarrass me. And he embarrassed her. He humiliated her. And she is the one person that was betrayed. And she is the one person, other than Brown himself, who I think if she said, you need to stand down, then he needs to stand down.
Yeah, and clearly for whatever reason, she hasn't said that. Yeah. So I don't know. I think he'll just soldier on.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way forward. The polls moved remarkably in the wake of that Campbell Live appearance. You know, it went from 70-something% saying he should go to around 50%. You know, it's ridiculous.
I would like to see a geographical breakdown of where the people were voting from in the early days of those online polls, and also if they were from Auckland, who they had voted for.
Oh, but no one voted at all. In the first, you know, was it 32%? I think was our turnout.
Terrible turnout, and it's actually shameful.
Did you guys vote?
I voted.
I did not vote.
You look dickhead.
Yeah,
that's so right. Bring it.
The personal tragedy for me in this story, I shit you not, Tuesday afternoon, I am completing a column I wrote for the MBR, also the print edition. Yes, there is one of those.
Careful you don't get fired.
I know. Well, I couldn't work out why Jock Anderson, this is the truth, I couldn't work out why he wasn't returning my emails. Then I knew.
Yeah.
But I was completing a column for the MBR about local democracy, about low turnout in local elections. And pretty much the moment I hit save, the story broke, thereby marginalizing what I thought was quite a relevant and interesting local democracy story to pretty much page 9. Yeah. So there you go. But my theory, I don't know what you guys think, is the electronic voting thing, and this has been a lot of discussion in the wake of the local body and DHB elections, is an absolute red herring. Yeah. It won't change a thing.
I didn't vote not because it was difficult. I didn't vote because I could not find myself in a position where I felt informed enough to make a decision.
There you go. I think I could have had
I put a lot more research in, but I just looked at the booklet and I looked at the hoardings and I was like, I have no idea how to make a useful and half-educated vote in this election.
Yep, and I think that's a more common reason not to vote. Voter education, motivation, the feeling that their vote will make a difference. So, a close-run election is a good motivator. I think process is so far down the pecking order in terms of reasons not to vote. It's not worth worrying about, and the fact that the government has announced a working party specifically to worry about it is a terrible waste of focus and money.
Yeah. So that's actually an interesting point, that it's more about getting the information to people. That does seem like it's a solution that's easier to come up with online. Get some decent interface designers in there, get some decent user experience stuff.
So I thought one of the problems I have with local body elections is it doesn't have parties as I understand them.
That's right. It has ersatz parties.
Yeah. And so a lot of people are independent, so it's really hard to judge them.
Not that many. Because
you've only got the paragraph or two that they've written, which may or may not be completely crazy.
Yeah.
Other people are members of parties that don't easily align to what you already understand. I mean, I don't want to vote necessarily strictly for a party, but at the same time, if I vote for a party, I have a fair idea of kind of what direction my vote is going. I find it very hard to correlate that in local body politics.
Yeah.
Not that I necessarily think that we should have, Greens, National, Labour and ACT or whoever else in New Zealand First, specifically only in local body politics, but that was part of the issue.
Yeah. But you're right. The information problem is probably a more straightforward problem than the voting problem. I know the path towards a secure and unique online identity is underway, but absolutely rock solid, scandal free, secure online voting, that's a big job, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and in so many, many, many ways.
Yeah. Whereas let's just tackle the less easily defined job, but arguably more important, of convincing people that local elections are relevant. Giving them the information they need to participate and then encouraging them to take part on the day, which is no one's job.
Other issues? I don't even know what half of the people actually are supposed to do. I don't know what the mayor does.
What those jobs are.
Yep, yeah. I don't know what the mayor does. I have no freaking idea what anyone on a district health board does. I'm not even sure what councillors do. I guess I have a fair idea, kind of just basically understanding the principle of a council. But yeah, nothing. No idea.
That's a really good point, and I'm not sure if the little booklet said that. And this goes back to a deeper problem, which I know the Electoral Commission, but I've had a professional relationship with them for a long time. People within the Electoral Commission historically have always said there's a real need for civics education in New Zealand.
Yes.
Who teaches us how Parliament works? Who teaches us what MMP really means? Secondary school is the perfect time to do that because you're going to vote pretty much when you leave secondary school.
Yeah.
But it seems, again, to be no one's problem. The greatest scandal for me is that it's no one's job within government to encourage anyone to vote.
Well, it's in the left's interest, generally. It's not actually in the right's interest to encourage anyone to vote because their supporters tend to vote anyway.
Absolutely right. And so you could argue that, you know, glibly, the young, brown and poor do not vote. Yeah. You could argue then that when, you know, a right-wing government is in power, there's never going to be funding or support for, you know, voter turnout campaigns. But there hasn't been when left-wing governments have been in power either.
Yeah.
It's a mystery.
So I remember
doing the orange balloon, man. What more
social
want?
Studies He's classes, great. But what was even covered in a social studies class? I don't remember.
No, I don't. There's never really been, or at least, I can't really use my schooling as an experience, but...
It wasn't what the Americans think of as civics, that's for damn sure, but I don't even remember what it was. I mean, talking about, you know, a bit about our history and how democracy works and what some of the alternatives are and, you know, how our government works and, you know, how alternatives to that work. Like, you know, one day we possibly will become a republic and how would that be? What would be different? Why is the Governor General the actual boss of the country and a representative of the Queen, for fuck's sake? It's all bizarre. It's a very strange system that we work in, but yeah, it works better when people actually vote. That's for damn sure.
It does. The orange balloon guy, as you call him, he's another one of the campaigns I've worked on in my advertising career, so I'm quite intimately involved with him. But his job was never to tell you to vote. It was always to tell you how to enroll. Sometimes to tell you about a referendum, such as the one we have coming up. But never to tell you how to vote or never to tell you to vote, which is a shame.
Yeah. All right. Well, we could – I think we've probably fixed the – we've solved the Len Brown problem. We're well on our way to solving the election problem.
I missed that.
And so I think we probably – we should wrap this up now before we solve all the problems because then what will we do next week?
What indeed will you do next week?
Maybe we also solved the excess milk, excess buttermilk, and child hunger issues.
That's true. We joined the dots on that one. That was nice.
Next week, we're going to teach young women how to drive.
This
might not make that a long story.
This show is cancelled. Beep.